Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Let's not go home just yet, Megan toyed with her drink. Okay, her friend Kaylee shrugged. I don't have to get up too early for work tomorrow. And hey, it's not as if my folks can say anything anymore. Well, that's just it. Megan rested her chin on her hand. My parents do want a say in when I come home. It's driving me crazy. Kaylee wrinkled her brow. Don't they realize you're 21 now? That you've graduated from college? Maybe when I get a job, Megan began, they'll finally see me as a responsible person. Of course, moving out might help too, Kaylee offered. But then Carla did that, and her folks wanted her to call every night and recap her whole day. Megan shook her head. Who knew being an adult included all this stuff? From a parent's perspective, what should we know about launching our young adults? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has visited with Parents' Perspective before and has professional experience with just these sorts of issues. Dr. Brad Sachs is a family psychologist and the best-selling author of numerous books, including his most recent, Emptying the Nest, Launching Your Young Adult Toward Success and Self-Reliance. Others include When No One Understands, Letters to a Teenager on Life, Loss, and the Hard Road to Adulthood, as well as The Good Enough Child and The Good Enough Teen. He is renowned for his creative and innovative treatment of children and families and lectures and leads workshops nationally and around the world. He and his wife, Dr. Karen Meckler, have raised 3 children and assorted dogs and recently became grandparents for the first time. Welcome back to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Sachs.
Thank you very much for having me back.
What's the biggest trap parents can fall into when trying to launch their young adults?
There's a complicated set of traps for contemporary parents, and one of them is that the assumption that the path and the journey into self-sufficiency is identical to how it was when parents were making that journey, because things are very different now. Times really have changed, and many parents get frustrated, exasperated, and annoyed because they assume that self-sufficiency is going to be achieved in the same way and at the same pace as it was for them or for their parents. And that discrepancy or incongruence between parents' expectations and the realities of young adult development often create resentment and tension at home.
I remember when I was a child, my father frowned on people changing jobs because in his generation, you got a job and you stayed with that company throughout your life, which he did.
Yes, and those days obviously are long gone, as are the days, you know, and this was only a generation ago, a young adult with a high school diploma could get a job in industry, easily afford a house and a couple of cars and to start a family, and be able to count on a pension and retirement and health insurance. And those days are long gone, too. The idea of a high school graduate having that kind of self-reliance is not going to happen anymore. So parents need to make adjustments to the realities, both economic as well as family dynamic realities, that have changed over this last generation.
Does that mean that kids, when they come out of high school, whether or not they go on to college, don't see themselves and shouldn't be seen as particularly self-reliant? Or are they wanting to be self-reliant, but the environment they're in just doesn't allow that?
We have to look both at the internal and the external factors, but clearly the environment is such that the path, that conveyor belt towards self-reliance, is a lot longer these days. But the initiative and the desire to separate and to differentiate, that hasn't changed. That's built into all of us. All of us desire a sense of autonomy. The reality is, though, that achieving autonomy, both financially and to some extent emotionally, because they're connected, that's a lot more challenging these days. And so the amount of training and education, for example, that it takes to get the kind of job that gives you financial self-reliance, you know, might take a decade more than it took certainly a generation or two ago.
What kinds of developmental tasks are young adults struggling with these days?
Well, one of the struggles for young adults is there's so many more options and possibilities and pathways available to them that they wind up being deluded into thinking that one of them is really significantly better than the other, or they have to be able to make the right choice or the perfect choice. And with a lot of the young adults I work with, it immobilizes them or paralyzes them because they have this misguided belief that one of those paths really is better than the other one. And again, a generation or two ago, there weren't a whole lot of paths available. You know, you came out of the army and you worked for your father or your father-in-law, or you married and you started your family. The pacing was very different. So one of the challenges for contemporary young adults is coming to terms with the fact that there's different milestones. These milestones are not paced and sequenced the same way as they were recently, and they have to figure out a way how to navigate through a very fragmented definition of what self-sufficiency is about.
Are there any models for young people today? You know, you were talking about we had our models of a generation earlier.
No, there's not as many models as they might like, which I think is one of the things that's challenging for them. You know, there's always developmental tasks that I think are sort of universal and cross-cultural in terms of moving ahead. But again, the realities of contemporary life for young adults is really very different than it ever was. And we, as the parents or even grandparents, have to make accommodations to that and understand that.
How can parents best help with these kinds of challenges?
Well, one is to understand that things are different. They can't apply the same rules to their children that they applied to themselves when they were making this transition into young adulthood and into self-sufficiency. And also, a lot of parents, and this is where it's not just sort of an external sociocultural narrative, but it's a family narrative, a lot of parents have to learn to let go a little bit more easily, because many parents have been so intimately involved with their children that it makes that separation and leave-taking that much harder. So a lot of the parents I'm working with who have young adults who are not leaving home have to learn to heat the water up a little bit so that there's a little bit more motivation on the young adult's part to take that leap towards self-sufficiency, since it's a lot more daunting than it might have been a generation ago.
What kinds of things are you recommending that they need to do?
Sometimes when I'm working with families in which the parents are complaining the young adult is not moving forward, or the young adult is complaining that he or she is not moving forward, there's an arrangement that I'm sort of tempted to sign up for myself, because it's really so pleasant and so privileged. Cell phones are paid for, and internet access is paid for, and car insurance is paid for, and food is paid for, and there aren't a whole lot of expectations or chores. No caregiving is expected of the young adult towards parents or grandparents or even great-grandparents. And so when life is good and pretty safe and comfortable, there's not a lot of motivation to summon the resourcefulness and the inner courage necessary to take those steps forward. So many times when I'm working with families in which there seems to be a stuckness, there's no traction, there doesn't seem to be any momentum forward, the parents have to find ways to make things a little bit less comfortable for the young adult so that that friction results in a sooner leave-taking or departure.
Is there a way for families to have an underpinning of expecting movement without having to take away the cell phone payment or take away this or take away that?
Yeah, I mean, in the book, I described those three types of families, the centripetal family, the centrifugal family, and the Mission Impossible family. And that might be a way to answer your question, because every family has these sort of internal force fields. In centripetal families, it's very hard for the child to leave because it's seen as an abandonment. It's seen as a betrayal of the family for the child to depart and move on with his or her life. And so there's this tremendous black hole-like quality that makes it hard for the young adult to leave. In centrifugal families, it's sort of the opposite. It's almost as if the child feels ejected or exiled from the family and asked to leave without having a full tank, so to speak. And so too much pressure is exerted on the child to leave, maybe before he or she is ready. And then the third is what I call a Mission Impossible family, in which the young adult is encouraged to leave, but there's so many expectations that this young adult is burdened with to excel, to achieve, to be accomplished, to fulfill the unfulfilled wishes or dreams of the parent, that he or she just can't make that journey because he or she sags under the weight of all those expectations. So when we look at the family and we look at what leads to a successful departure, often it has to do with aligning those forces within the family and making sure there's not too strong of a tendency towards centrifugality or centripetality, or just making things impossible for the young adult.
We'll be right back to continue our discussion on launching our young adults.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Brad Sachs about launching our young adults.
Dr. Sachs, you've given parents a number of conversation pointers in this book for a variety of interactions with their young adults. What do they all have in common?
The main shift that I ask parents to make at this stage of parenthood, because you want to continue to have dialogues and conversations, is the conversation has to be more of an internal one. It has to be within the young adult rather than between the young adult and the parent or vice versa. But many young adults need some help crystallizing or focusing the questions that they need to ask of themselves, questions having to do with who am I, who was I, what do I need to leave behind, who do I want to become, what do I need to give up to become who I want to become? So the conversation has to be shifted from some sort of parent administering or dictating to the child and more stimulating the young adult's curiosity and interest, inquisitiveness about why he or she does what he or she does. And that usually pays off and leads to some sort of inner motivation that drives young adults forward in healthy ways.
Do you think some of these things happen when these young adults are in college? I remember, for example, we expected my children to have a credit card and pay that bill. That was part of going to college.
Right.
You had expenses they had to earn spending money in the summers and budget it through the course of the school year.
The process of equipping children to become autonomous, that starts very early on. This is not a process that you begin, you know, when they're finishing middle school or just getting to the end of high school. And so you're right, by the time your children were in college, that's a very legitimate and reasonable set of expectations or responsibilities for them to take on. When I'm working with families who are struggling with that launch, it's because not enough has been expected of the children developmentally all the way through. So then all of a sudden they're confronted with responsibilities of young adulthood that they're really not able to handle. These are conversations or endeavors or interactions that really have to begin very early on, because when children feel responsible, they feel self-assured. A lot of parents are misled into thinking that, you know, praising and reinforcing children or rewarding them provides self-esteem, but it really undermines their self-esteem and their motivation. The basis for that is responsibility and handling it with grace and with courage. And so when we give our children those possibilities and those opportunities, they tend to make that transition and that pilgrimage towards self-reliance a lot more efficiently and confidently.
I remember one of my sons, after college, came home to live at home. He didn't go right to graduate school like his brothers. And he moved out about 6 months later, moved in with three friends. But the reason was, at the time, he said, I think I need a little more privacy than I can have living at home.
Right.
He had a girlfriend.
Right.
And there were rules in our house.
Right.
So he needed to live with his contemporaries.
And yes.
That was fine.
Well, and that goes back to what I was saying a moment before. He was a little uncomfortable there because he didn't have the privacy that he would crave. And that provided that impetus forward. But we also don't want to equate it too much with geography. There's many young adults who live away from home who are very, very dependent on their parents financially and emotionally. And there's plenty of young adults who live at home for various reasons who are very independent and self-reliant financially and emotionally. You know, certainly cross-culturally, you know, we're kind of unique in this country in expecting young adults to leave home. Multi-generational households really are the norm in other generations in our country and certainly across the world. So we shouldn't overplay too much this issue of geography and where they're living. The issue is, are they feeling psychologically and financially self-reliant? Can they stand on their own two feet?
Can you give some examples of how a conversation would go in order to help adult children sort of realize where they're going or who they are, the questions that you were talking about?
Well, again, the questions would be framed more on along the lines or on the axis of asking them to think more about why they do what they do rather than telling them what they ought to be doing. And so in the book, I provide lots of examples of those kinds of dialogues. So, you know, it would depend on the issue, obviously, but the key would be asking questions that get them thinking about themselves rather than responding to or defending themselves against their parents. And when you stimulate those kinds of inner dialogues, that usually pays off handsomely in terms of motivation and direction. But when it's judgment or condemnation or reinforcement or evaluation from the parent, good or bad, that tends to distract the young adult from evaluating him or herself, and that's the key at this age. They don't really need to be thinking carefully about what we think as parents. They need to be thinking carefully about what they think. And many times, there's been so much external evaluation and praise or condemnation or reward or judgment that they no longer have that inner compass that directs them. So we have to watch our tendency to evaluate, judge harshly or positively, and try to get them to think about what it's like for them to be doing what they're doing or not doing what they're not doing.
What's the complaint you most often hear from young adults about their parents?
I think the most common complaint from young adults is that their parents don't understand that times have changed and that the world is a very different world than it was when their parents were making this journey across the threshold. I think many young adults are frustrated by that. And so they say in various ways, you know, my parents don't understand me. But what I think they're saying is my parents don't understand the complexity of this world that I'm trying to navigate my way through. That the paths are not clearly defined, that the milestones are not that clearly marked, and that it takes a long time to get any kind of traction or momentum. And so I think young adults often feel exasperated or frustrated by what they feel is a lack of understanding or empathy from their parents' part as to how daunting that journey can be for contemporary young adults.
We'll be right back to finish our discussion on launching our young adults.
For an audio CD of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parent's Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parent's Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Brad Sachs about launching young adults. Forgiveness seems to be an important ingredient in our relationships with our grown-up children. Why is that?
Well, forgiveness frees us. It's a liberating process. And, you know, we all enter parenthood with expectations for our children. And, of course, we make these tremendous investments and compromises and sacrifices on their behalf. And naturally, when we make these compromises and investments and sacrifices, we want some payoff, and our children don't always pay us off in the currency that we would like them to pay us off in. So forgiveness allows us to release our children from the bind that they be who we want them to be rather than who they're destined to be. And that's why it's important, particularly at this particular stage of parenthood, for parents to learn to forgive, not only forgive their children for not being who they wanted them to be, but also to forgive themselves. Because you can't launch your children without feeling tremendous remorse and regret about all the things you wished you had done and didn't do, or all the things you said that you wished you hadn't said. And so when we forgive, it kind of lubricates this process and allows the family to move forward to the next stage in their evolution and continue to feel connected and interdependent with each other in a healthy way.
Is this something we have to say outright?
I think usually at a certain point, it's a good thing for it to be said around a certain issue. It's very healing for a parent to say to a child, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I wasn't who you wanted me to be. I'm sorry who I wasn't who I wanted to be. I think that acknowledgement of contrition and remorse, you know, is a heroic act, but it really enables the family to make that move developmentally to the next stage in their evolution. I'm not saying that parents should constantly be ridden with guilt and doing mea culpas all the time, but I think it's very important for children to hear that, yes, we weren't perfect, and you're not going to be perfect either, and that doesn't mean you're less lovable. And it doesn't mean you have less worth just because you can't do everything just right. So when parents say those words to their children, I think it has great healing powers. And I think when parents say it to themselves, it also has curative properties.
I think most parents are trying their best. And it's somewhat trial and error because each child is an individual. And I think we have to admit that to them.
And there's great grief that takes place. That's the other thing I focus on in the book. There's tremendous mourning in the family when they move to the next stage of development. There's enormous mourning for the young adult who has to bury his or her childhood in the service of moving forward into adulthood, because you really have to say goodbye to childhood to become a competent adult. And, of course, there's great mourning for the parent because they're letting go of the stage in their lives when they felt most relevant, most necessary, most essential. You're never more needed than when you're a parent. And when your children become self-sufficient and begin to leave you behind, there's tremendous grief entailed with that process. And so the mourning, just like the forgiveness, liberates us, it emancipates us, and it lets the whole family, you know, voyage forth to the next shore, to the next beachhead that they're going to establish.
So do you think we do this mourning consciously?
Well, I think we should, but unfortunately we don't. And, you know, a lot of the families that I work with, it's as if they're trying to make time stand still. You know, they're keeping the family in a state of suspended animation. And so that, again, makes it hard for the young adult to move forward, because that goes back to that theme of the centripetal family. It's as if the child is betraying or abandoning the family. It's a treasonous act to leave the family behind. And so I think we don't do a very good job of speaking the language of grief in our culture. And I'm not talking just about grief when people die. And so, yeah, I think it should be more conscious and more articulated that we need to grieve for what we're leaving behind, because that's the only way that you can welcome what awaits and you can embrace.
Now, do you envision that parents would be saying to their children, I'm so sorry that you're not a little kid anymore, but I'm glad that you're growing up?
Yeah, I think speaking to the mixed feelings, the bittersweetness of growth and development is very important. We sanitize parenthood in this culture, and we make it seem like it's going to be this, you know, perpetually euphoric, delightful endeavor. And if it's not, there must be something wrong with the child or something wrong with the parent. And that doesn't really help parents and children adjust to the realities of life. So, yes, anything that acknowledges to the young adult child, this is hard for me, it's probably hard for you in certain ways, but as a family, maybe we can find ways to talk about it or to engage, to adapt and to adjust to the realities of our changing relationship. When parents crystallize those kinds of thoughts and conversations, it really is both inspiring and liberating for the young adult, because it helps them to see that growth, while it entails loss, also is something that we all deserve to experience.
I think the noticeable stages that I remember and I'm seeing now as a grandparent were watching my children go away from me and have their own friendships and develop friendships with people whose parents I didn't know. You know, once they got into high school, I didn't know all the parents. It is a grieving feeling.
Yes. Yeah, you're marginalized. And the reality is children replace us. I mean, that's what happens when we have children. They're there to replace us, and they nudge us. Certainly grandchildren nudge us even further towards mortality. And that's a reality that we don't always want to contemplate. But when we do contemplate it in a very active, curious, friendly way rather than a dreadful way, it really enriches our lives. And we have to, as parents, be able to come to terms with that. And again, many times when I'm working with families that seem stuck on this cusp of young adulthood, unable to move forward, it's because they haven't been able to speak the language of grief, because they're not realizing that they need to mourn. And that mourning process, painful as it is, has everything to do with the family's capacity to move forward. It's not about making plans. It's not about deciding which graduate school. It has to do with letting go and coming to terms.
And letting them go to the graduate school of their choice,
right,
or the field of their choice, which sometimes is hard for parents.
Sure. Well, we have an image of what's best, and we are all deluded as parents that if we gave them all the right resources and sent them to the right school, that they'll meet the right person and have the right children, and that's not how life works. You know, the old Jewish saying, man plans and God laughs. That's how it is for parents. You know, you can plan all you want, but, you know, other forces are going to take over. But when we equip our children with that kind of awareness and reality and resourcefulness and resilience, it enables them to more flexibly and more nimbly navigate a world that's becoming more and more unpredictable. And we can't inoculate or immunize our children or our families against these realities. What we can do, though, is give them the capacity to navigate through them with a certain amount of adroitness. And that's what these issues related to forgiveness and grieving and mourning have to do with. That's what keeps us supple in the face of very difficult forces and headwinds.
I think one of the hardest things to do as a parent is to watch your child struggle or suffer with some sort of
Absolutely.
A problem and know that you can't do it for them.
Right. But that statement of faith that you make in your child when you allow them to suffer or when you don't instantly rescue or protect them, that's what they carry with them. They assimilate that. They don't feel abandoned or neglected. They feel like you believe in them. And when we believe in our children more than they believe in themselves, that's what's most nourishing, and that's what's going to carry them over the adversity and over the challenges that they're all likely to face.
In addition to your book, Emptying the Nest, what resources would you suggest for our listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues we've been discussing?
The MacArthur Foundation did a very nice series of books which focus on the realities of young adulthood in contemporary culture. The psychologist Jeffrey Arnett, who has done a lot of research on emerging adulthood, or what he calls emerging adulthood, his work is worth looking at as well. I have a website which is just my name, drbradsacks.com.
Well, this has certainly been an interesting and helpful discussion. So, Dr. Brad Sacks, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Brad Sacks' book, Emptying the Nest, Launching Your Young Adult Toward Success and Self-Reliance. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. Mention show number 473, and please tell us what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from Norman and Helen Camero. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.